This program is intended for mature audiences only.
Welcome to Sex, Love, and Intimacy. I'm your host, Chip August. On today's show, we have a wonderful guest, Allison Armstrong. Allison is the founder and guiding light of PAX Programs, that's PAX Programs Incorporated. She's the creator of Celebrating Men, Satisfying Women. It's a workshop, actually. It looks like a whole series of workshops. She's the author of Keys to the Kingdom. And Allison has done lots of research and knows a lot and lots and lots about men and women and how to make peace between them. Today, I hope we're going to be talking about her amazing journey into the study of men, like how she got there and what she's learned. And I hope we're going to get some tips and advice on communication and on intimacy and maybe a lot more understanding about the conflict and starting to end some of the confusion that happens between men and women.
You have to imagine red hair, bright pink lipstick, Texas accent, saying, "Why is it that men are so wonderful in the beginning, and they'll take you to great places and bring you gifts and be very romantic and listen to you talk about your pets and your family, and then after a few weeks or a few months, they turn into sports watching, pizza eating, beer belching, couch slugs." He said, "You're a frog farmer." And she said, "What?" And he said, "Some women turn frogs into princes. You, my dear, turn princes into frogs."
Wow.
Whenever they did something that surprised me, I would try to figure out why they did it. And then when I thought I knew why they did it, I'd ask them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was shocking because in the beginning I was always wrong. And that was a real eye-opener for me because the motivations that I had really projected onto these three men were the typical motivations of women. I realized that as a woman, I would never experience being powerful until I was strong enough to allow men to be powerful. It was just this moment of clarity that it just goes together. We're going to be powerful together or we're going to be basket cases together. And there's no other possible combination. Men have infinitely stronger sense of yourself than a woman does. Women survive by adapting.
Welcome, Allison Armstrong.
Thanks, Chip.
I am really glad you can be here, and I have so many questions for you.
Fire away.
I was looking at your biography, and I noticed that actually you were pretty big as a homeless advocate in your home county, and were doing a lot of work with homeless children and homeless men. And can you tell me how a homeless advocate winds up teaching women about men?
Yeah, I'll try to give you the short version, but it probably starts with inheriting my father's brain. My dad's an engineer and always trying to figure out how things work and how to make it better, and my mind works the same way. It's just been applied to the human condition, you know, instead of airplanes and automobiles. And when I was the chairperson of the Orange County Homeless Issues Task Force, my approach to that was really in trying to determine the root causes of homelessness and get to the bottom of it and the bottom of it and the bottom of it. And that's my obsession, you know, is finding the place where the most simplest action could completely change the course of events. And that was, in my work with the homeless, you know, it brought me back to children. So much of homelessness, the cause lies in something that happened or shouldn't have happened in a child's life. And I was just merrily pursuing that in my professional life. And then meanwhile, my own marriage to my first husband was completely dissatisfying. We were barely friends, you know, just roommates, spent very little time together. My hopes and dreams for what a marriage could be or should be were not even coming close, and it got to the point where I realized it was never going to happen, and I asked David for a divorce, and I started a relationship with a man who did all the things that I'd hoped would happen. He was very interested and romantic and fascinated with my work, and it was great, you know. I thought, oh, this is really cool. I just married the wrong guy, and then a few months later, I had all the same complaints about him that I had about my husband. He literally had changed. He had completely changed, and I was baffled by that and trying to figure out why, when did this happen, how did this happen, and I concluded that he had changed when he caught me, you know, when the pursuit was over. And it's a big myth, really, amongst women that men need the chase and need the pursuit, and while that's true, the myth is our interpretation of what that means. But I decided, you know, he changed when he caught me, and so my new approach to relationships would be to never be caught. And even though I wanted to be caught, I wanted to be caught and be married and have more children and live happily ever after. But this is my new strategy for dealing with opposite sex. And then I went to a seminar. I was at a seminar, and my friend asked the man who was teaching the seminar. He was talking about love and communication, and I can't do a Texas accent, but you have to imagine red hair, bright pink lipstick, Texas accent, saying, why is it that men are so wonderful in the beginning, and they'll take you to great places and bring you gifts and be very romantic and listen to you talk about your pets and your family, and then after a few weeks or a few months, they turn into sports watching, pizza eating, beer belching couch slugs?
Good question.
she was very nasty in the way that she said it, and I was watching. His name was Herb, and I was watching the man, and I expected him to get defensive. And like you, I grew up in an alcoholic household, so I have those keen observations, right? That
yeah.
way that we are very tuned in to see, read body language and who people are from moment to moment. And so I was keenly observing him and was surprised when he liked the question. You know, he had
yeah.
this very positive response to the question, and he strolled up to her and he looked her up and down, and he said, it was so funny, he said, you're a frog farmer. And she said, what? And he said, some women turn frogs into princes. You, my dear, turn princes into frogs.
Wow.
And, oh, my gosh. It struck me through the heart. I just, I had this vision of this huge farmhouse with rows and rows of frogs with little human heads. And there was my boyfriend that I'd just broken up with, and there was my ex-husband, and there were all the men before them who had started out being wonderful, and I was just skewered. I don't really remember anything that happened the rest of the night. I just sat there thinking, I'm a frog farmer. Oh my God, I'm a frog farmer. I'm a really successful frog farmer. You know, I was very effective. I realized I could bring the worst out in a man, usually in about 10 days. And I was proud of myself. I thought I was revealing the con,
right.
You know? And it occurred to me in that moment that maybe it was more like kicking a dog and being surprised when it ran away or bit your foot.
Mm.
And so I committed myself that evening that I was going to find out how I did it, because even though I was very successful, it was not clear the cause and effect.
Right.
And I decided to study men and find out what was I doing and what do women do that brings out the worst in men.
It's a great question. It's a terrific question. Now, I just, before we run too fast past this, I heard you say, I thought I was trying to protect myself from the con.
Yes.
And so I want to come back to that protection a little bit here. So I think what I'm hearing you say is, in the name of trying not to get hurt, what you wound up doing was pushing away, hurting, emasculating the men that you were with. Is that kind of what it was?
Yeah, I, over the years, had developed a really negative view of men, pretty typical view of men, and was suspicious of interest and chivalry and passion and romance, and had concluded that that was all just an act, and if I poked hard enough, I could find out what was behind the act.
Mm.
And not realizing that it was the actual poking
right.
that brought about the end of that behavior.
Right, right, that it wasn't an act, but that when you received it as an act, basically, who wanted to keep doing it then?
Yeah, and right. and another way to put it is men would go from initiating a relationship with me and being generative and causing, you know, mm-hmm. moments of intimacy and romance and interest in being together. So they'd be very proactive in their relationships with me. And then because of the way that I reacted, they became defensive.
Yeah.
And I thought their defensiveness was a weakness on their part instead of a totally appropriate response to my attack.
Right. Right. So now you decided to do some research.
I did. I decided to study men.
How did you do this?
Well, because I ran a nonprofit organization, I had business consulting clients on the side
mm-hmm.
to supplement my income, and I was the consultant to three business consultants, and I was their cheerleader, their blackboard, their their sounding board, their coach, their advisor, their confidant, their friend, and so I just started with them. And whenever they did something that surprised me, I would try to figure out why they did it. And then when I thought I knew why they did it, I'd ask them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was shocking because in the beginning I was always wrong. and that was a real eye opener for me because the motivations that I had really projected onto these three men were the typical motivations of women. And
yep.
And when they were appalled that I would think they would ever do anything for that reason, I started to realize that that these people were much more different than I thought. And that's when I realized that I related to men as hairy women,
right?
You know, as sort of rude women, uncouth women, insensitive women, but basically women. I thought at the core we were exactly the same, and men were just misbehaving. You know, that they knew what they should be doing and they did something else instead. And as I talked to Stephen and Brooke and Carl, I found out, because their answers were exactly the same. I mean, they were very much aligned with each other. That's when I realized that I was completely off base and needed to develop a real ability to listen and have compassion and discover who these people were.
Wow.
And
that's a pretty big movement from being a frog farmer to being actually intrigued and wanting to know what's happening for those men.
Yes, it was a huge shift for me. And as you can imagine, as a man, being interact with a woman who is intrigued and not presuming, especially not presuming guilt,
mm-hmm.
Who wanted really to understand you and, wow, why do you do what you do? From, what'd you do that for, you know?
Mm-hmm.
men immediately began responding to me very differently.
I'll bet. Yes, that would make you very popular.
It was great. It was really great. And unfortunately, I didn't know that I had oh gosh, this is sad to talk about, but it did make me very popular, but I didn't know that who was listening was the point of view, know thy enemy.
Yeah.
And so for the first 6 months of my research, everything that I learned about men, unconsciously, I used against men.
Right, right. You were arming yourself with information.
I really was. It was the best defense is a good offense.
Yeah.
And I would learn these extraordinary things about you and then turn around and use it to manipulate you more effectively.
Yeah.
And what most women don't know is that manipulation always backfires.
Yeah. Yeah, it always works in the short term, and it always fails in the long term.
Yeah.
It is, and
you're worse off.
Yeah.
Definitely worse off. And that's what was happening in my relationships until a very good friend of mine, and I bless her for it, her name's Ellen Hurst, she called me on it. And she said, Allison, men are attracted to you like bees to honey, and when you're done with them, it's as if they've been with a vampire.
Wow.
And she proceeded to lay out for me every way that she had directly witnessed me emasculating men or knew that I had because she saw the results.
Wow.
And as she laid it out for me, this is so awful. So she's telling me, wait, you know, this way and that way, and you do this and you do that, and you said this and you said that, and I was like, uh-huh, yeah, yeah, oh yeah, uh-huh, uh-huh. And I'm like, what's the problem?
Right.
You know, I mean, everything I did was what women do. Everything I did is what my mother did, my stepsisters, my friends, what you see on TV. It was totally normal, everything she was describing, and so I couldn't understand why there was a problem with it. And then, she got right to me. She said, you're even doing it to Jeffrey.
Ooh.
Who is my son, and at the time he was 3 years old.
Ooh.
Yeah, right to the mother's heart. And
yeah.
I could see that from the moment Jeff was born, I was trying to squish and carve the man out of him.
Right.
You know, it was so unappealing to me. I was going to raise my son to be a woman.
Right.
And I thought, honestly, I thought I was doing him a favor.
Right, right. You were going to correct him of all these terrible habits, and yeah, I got it.
And all these tendencies, and all these unevolved and uncouth ways of being. And in that moment, I saw that I was really just killing him off.
Mm-hmm.
And he's such a magnificent person. And so when she asked me to give it up, which was terrifying to me, the idea of, you know, to give up emasculating men, are you kidding? That's how I protect myself, you know,
right.
Which is, I said, but they'll hurt me, you know. But I realized that every time I emasculated a man, it was from fear. And it reinforced my own sense of weakness and reinforced that I really didn't know how to deal with men, so I played dirty.
Yeah.
And I realized that as a woman, I would never experience being powerful until I was strong enough to allow men to be powerful.
Right.
And it was just this moment of clarity that it just goes together. We're going
right.
to be powerful together, or we're going to be basket cases together, and there's no other possible combination.
As human beings, we often confuse force with power, and we don't quite get that I can be forceful and still feel powerless. That really powerful, what makes us feel powerful is when we are adept at empowering ourselves and others.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Listen, we need to stop for just a moment and take a break here, give a little support for our sponsors. This is Chip August. I'm talking to Allison Armstrong. We're having a great conversation. Please come on right back, but listen in and hear what our sponsors have to say. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back. This is Chip August. You're listening to Sex, Love, and Intimacy, and my guest, Allison Armstrong, who is the creator of the Celebrating Men, Satisfying Women workshop. And we're talking about men and women, and we're really talking about Allison's journey. When we took a break, you were kind of talking about your epiphany, your aha moment here. I love your story. Your story is really great. It had me wondering, do you really think the sexes are at war? I mean, the way you describe it, it almost sounds like, you know, you're the you know, there you are in the trenches fighting the battle.
Well, I think, I think that one sex is at war, and it's mine.
Well,
what I have said many, many times, and women laugh and nod, is that the context that women have inherited for our relationships with men is an adversarial context, and it goes very much like, find the best enemy you can and marry him.
Yeah, yeah. I've had that feeling.
Yes, yes, I'm sure. And we don't even, it's not conscious. Even though we talk about men in such a despairing way, it never really bubbles to the surface. Gosh, something's really off here.
Yeah.
It's just status quo. And in that moment that I gave up emasculating men forever, I unwittingly shifted myself into a new paradigm, and is a paradigm of partnership. And my study of men continued from that moment in that new paradigm, and for a long time it looked like a man would do something that, you know, was offensive to me or hurtful to me, or, you know, something a woman would never do if she cared about you. And it was, and I would see him as he did it, as he arrived late or said the wrong thing or wore the wrong clothes, I'd see him hand me the knife or hand me the gun or put the grenade in my hand. He would give me the weapon, and I would look at it, and normally I would have used it, and instead I would just set it down beside me and have a different kind of conversation. And oh my gosh, it changed everything. And I don't think it is any coincidence that, oh gosh, it was maybe 3 weeks later that I met my husband.
Wow.
You know, we've been together for 16 years now. And it happened right away, and I don't think he would have noticed me before, or he might have seen me and gone, oof, you know, pretty but edgy, you know, that way that men do, like, oh, too sharp,
yep,
too crunchy, too hard. And instead, there was this new openness and softness and radiance that, you know, it was love at first sight for him.
Well, now, okay, so let's talk about men for a minute here.
Okay.
If I get Freud right, and I usually do get Freud right, he really thought it was as simple as every man wanted to marry his mother, every woman wanted to marry her father, you know, and that was the fundamental psychological conflict, right, was this Oedipal conflict that we want to marry our mothers, and then we're disgusted at ourselves for wanting to marry our mothers. Do men really want to marry their mothers?
Oh, gosh. Men want to marry a woman who expresses qualities that hopefully he got from his mother, qualities of unconditional love, acceptance, faith in him, encouragement, giving him the benefit of the doubt, expressing love in those small acts of caring and support that, you know, like new underwear in your top drawer. And I mean, that is definitely something I've heard men express over and over again, that they need in a wife. Being cared for and taken care of and believed in that way is such an advantage to them in life. But they don't want to be mothered, which is the mistake that women make all the time. And the difference between those beautiful, feminine, nurturing mother qualities and the mothering that women do is the attitude that makes a man feel like he's being treated like a five-year-old.
Yeah.
And where the woman is controlling and directing instead of offering and inviting. And so one, you know, one is irresistible, and the other he'll head for the hills. It's just awful. But I would say, added to that, I mean, he doesn't want to just marry the nurturer. He also, I mean, I call them the temptress and the queen.
Yeah.
He wants. Men are so you know this, your men are so recharged and filled up by the physical vitality of women and completely expanded and nurtured by our sensual and sexual energy.
Yeah.
And so you need that as well.
Yeah.
And then the queen, which is our vision, our spirit, our ethics, our morality, our big picture view of, you know, wanting the world to be a better place, our generosity, those qualities, what we call the queen, those qualities make a man want to be a better man. They bring out the best in you and inspire you and have you admire a woman. And, you know, so those three things, which is what we call them, the temptress, the mother, and the queen, that's femininity. And
so you're trying to make like a balance of this. You're trying to help women find all of it, right?
Well, it's not. We actually don't have to find it because it's in us.
Mm.
All the qualities I've mentioned are our birthright. But what happens is we don't know how valuable they are, so we instead put our energy into expressing very masculine characteristics. And one thing to know about women, which is really different for men and surprising to men, is men have infinitely stronger sense of yourself than a woman does. Women survive by adapting. That's cave woman within has her eye on how to adapt at every moment in order to survive and to succeed. And so we, without even trying to, will become whatever a relationship or family or organization or job or even society values the most. We'll become it.
Yeah.
And our society is sort of peculiar because we bash men and blame men for everything that's wrong, but we worship masculine qualities and characteristics of productivity and being logical and generative, and they're all great qualities. They're just not the only qualities a world needs.
Yeah.
But women have, I think the feminist movement, although we owe it a lot for what's possible between men and women now as equals, it was a misnomer. Women became less feminine as a result of the feminist movement. It should have been called the womanist movement.
Mm.
And because it has resulted in the masculinization of women, and it has a lot to do with our difficulties in being, you know, in getting married and being married and staying married, because women try to present themselves as, look how productive I am and I'm so little trouble, thinking that makes her attractive to a man. When that doesn't make her attractive at all to a man. It's like, okay, good, I should hire you to work for me.
Right.
but that's not what he wants in a partner, you know. And the way one man put it was, what I love about women is everything about you that's not me. You know, I'm not looking for someone just like me to partner with. I'm looking for what I'm missing, what I don't have. And even on my best day, I am not feminine.
It's exactly right. We're not looking for our mirror. We're looking for our complement.
And, mm-hmm.
We need to take a break again. I'm talking to Alison Armstrong. We're talking about men and women, and talking about sort of that war between the sexes, and maybe how to promote some peace. Please stay with us through the sponsors and come on back. We're going to have one more segment here, and also I'm going to ask Alison to perhaps give us an exercise that we can do at home to make us better listeners. We'll be right back. We're back. I'm your host, Chip August. You're listening to Sex, Love, and Intimacy. We're talking to Alison Armstrong, and she's just given me a wealth of stuff about women and how women see men and how relationships work. And Alison, it's just been great fun talking to you. And I just want to know, we're almost out of time. I kind of want to leave you with a final question. And also, I do have a request that perhaps you have an exercise that women can do that will help them not be frog farmers and actually maybe access that temptress and that queen and that mother. So, but the question first, okay, so the way psychologists usually phrase this is, what do men really want? What do women really want? So what do women really want?
Oh, my gosh. What do women really want in life, or what do women really want from men?
In relationship.
I think we want to feel safe, which for us has a lot to do with the tone of your voice and the volume of your voice.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to feel that we're enough.
Mm.
You know, that our all our body parts are the right size and shape.
Yeah.
That we're pretty enough, we're good enough, we're interesting enough. We want to be listened to in a way that's not natural for men, and we don't know we need to set men up to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I think most women want to make their men laugh.
Mm.
You know, we're really happy when you think we're funny.
Mm.
That is cool. And there was a joke circulating around the internet that was really good, a story about the woman being the witch or the princess, and I thought it was really good because the end of it was that what a really woman really wants is choice, you know, a woman really wants a say in her life. And I think what I love about my research into men is by understanding men, I have more of a say and control over the quality of my relationships than I ever had before wielding my sword.
Yeah. So as we end, I always ask my guests if you have an exercise that some of my listeners can do at home. I just like to leave them with an exercise or a technique or a thing that they can actually do that might improve their love, their intimacy, the sexuality in their life. So I'm wondering, have you got an exercise for perhaps some of the women that are listening?
Well, I have so many. I'd have to pick. Well, you mentioned before an exercise for women to nurture their own femininity.
That'd be great.
well, this may not sound like an exercise, but sleep. Women need to sleep. We can't be feminine on fumes. A woman can be masculine on chocolate and caffeine, but she can't be feminine without real honest-to-goodness energy, which usually comes from sleep and from movement. So those are some of the best ways to nurture our own femininity. And something that they could do with their partner, we spoke earlier about men, you know, what is it about a man's own mom that he wishes the woman in his life would be? I'd recommend that they ask the man in their life, what are the things that they do that have him feel the most supported and the most appreciated? But this is really important. After she asks the question, she needs to put imaginary duct tape over her mouth.
Yeah.
Because men and women think so differently. When a man doesn't answer the question immediately, a woman will usually think he didn't get the question and she'll rephrase it. And then when he doesn't answer that immediately, she'll think he doesn't really know the answer, so then she'll give him multiple choice.
Right, right.
Not realizing that in all those cases, she's actually interrupted his thinking process, whereby he's really honoring the question and answering it sincerely, and that takes more time because he's going to pull it from a deeper place in himself.
Absolutely.
And the most precious
gift we give is silence.
We call it listen 30 seconds longer.
Yeah.
So ask the question, don't rephrase it, don't interrupt, don't suggest anything, just put the imaginary duct tape over your mouth and listen and learn.
Well, you two seem great to talk to. I am really sorry we're out of time. And, in fact, I am so sorry we're out of time that I would like to do another show with you. And so are you happy to come back and talk to me some more?
I'd love to do that.
That would be great. Those of you who are listening, if you'd like to send email to me, you can email me at chip@personallifemedia.com. That's personal life media, all written as one word. If you want to leave a voicemail for me, you can actually call 206-350-5333. If you leave your name, my show name, Sex, Love, and Intimacy, and your comment or your question, also leave your phone number and or an email. And when you leave that message will get forwarded to me relatively quickly. Leaving a message does indicate your agreement for us to use your message on air. So please be aware that if you're leaving a message, we may use it on air. We're going to be next show actually will be Allison again, because as long as we have her here, why, let's talk some more. This kind of brings us to the end of the show. For text and transcripts of this show and other shows on the Personal Life Media Network, please visit our website at personallifemedia.com. Personal Life Media, all as one word. I'm Chip August. Thanks so much for listening, and I hope you'll tune in again.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com. This program is intended for mature audiences only.
Welcome to Sex, Love, and Intimacy. I'm your host, Chip August. Our guest this show is Allison Armstrong. Allison is the founder and guiding light of PAX Programs Incorporated, that's PAX. She's the creator of the Celebrating Men, Satisfying Women workshop, and the author of Keys to the Kingdom. Those of you who've been listening pretty regularly, you probably heard Allison in our last show. We've got her back again. Allison is a remarkable person. She designs and leads transformational programs for adults. She's been doing it for over 20 years. She creates these workshops for helping women to understand men, for helping end the war between the sexes, to really create peace. And just a wealth of information on how to communicate and on what men really want and on what women really want. And I'm really thrilled that she's here to talk to us again.
Men are what I call single focus, and your brains work very differently, and you take our questions really seriously, but it's like a train on the track. So it's sort of, you know, it's going to get going, right? And if you don't interrupt a man when he's answering your question, he'll pick up steam, and the conversation will get more and more interesting and deeper and richer the longer she listens. Women don't know that men's opinions are a combination of the information he trusts and his values, his identity. So if a woman can shift to listen to learn, which literally as she's listening, she's asking the question, what matters to him? What matters to him? What is he telling me about what's important to him? What is he showing me? What matters to him? What matters to him? If she's asking that question, then it'll be a treasure chest.
I think if you ask a man, what lets me know you really love me, I'm guessing cooking my favorite dinner does not figure in the top five.
Yep, you know,
right? If you ask a woman, dear, how do you know I really love you? You know, I'm guessing getting my car serviced does not figure in the top five, and yet that's what we do.
And then the partner question, which is, what do you need to give me what I need? And I have to teach women, when you ask a man that question, what do you need to give me what I need, give up any expectation that what he's going to say will make sense to you.
So, welcome, Allison.
Thank you.
On the break, when we were sort of in between shows, I started talking to you a little bit about my attitudes about interruptions, and you said, well, let's talk about that on air, so I'm bringing that back right now. Allison was mentioning that it would be fine if I interrupted her if I felt like she was going on too long, and I was saying that I have this sense that men interrupt women too much, and that one of my personal goals in my own development is to not interrupt women, because it feels like I'm disempowering people in my life, and I have a daughter, and I don't want to disempower her, and I don't want to disempower other women. So I noticed you had a reaction to that, Allison, so I'd love to hear.
Well, it's great, because interrupting doesn't work in either direction,
mm-hmm.
You know, from men to women or women to men. But we do it for completely different reasons, and it doesn't work for completely different reasons. Can I talk about that?
Please, say more. I'm fascinated.
Well, in the last show, I gave women the exercise of asking a man a question and then putting imaginary duct tape over their mouth,
mm-hmm.
and just listening for the answer. And women tend to speak more like off the top of their head. You can ask me a question and I'll have an answer for you right away. So women interrupt men before they even start speaking. We interrupt you when you're thinking about the answer to the question. And it's because you haven't started yet. We figured since you're just a hairy woman, you should have already started speaking. And if you haven't started speaking, you must not have understood my question. And not knowing that men are what I call single focused, and your brains work very differently, and you take our questions really seriously. But it's like a train on the track. So it's sort of, it's going to get going, right? And if you don't interrupt a man when he's answering your question, he'll pick up steam. And the conversation will get more and more interesting and deeper and richer the longer she listens. But because women are not single-focused, we're what I call diffuse awareness, which means to pour in every direction, which, by the way, is what causes us to multitask and appear very distracted to men. Because we think so differently, we don't understand that this guy's on a track, let him keep going. And if you do, if women would just listen to men without interrupting, we would experience the intimacy that we want with men. Actually, if you combine that and there's a certain way of listening to learn from a man, because men are naturally concealing. You're a warrior, so you conceal your instinct tells you to conceal your strengths, so you have the element of surprise, and conceal your weaknesses so that they won't be exploited, and conceal your attachments so they won't be used against you. Then it's the opposite of women, which is know me, love me, save me. But if you can listen to a man instead of from do I agree or disagree with you, if you can listen to learn, men reveal themselves, their values, their priorities, what really matters to them in everything that you say. You could tell me about a golf game and I'll find out who you are. But you have to listen to learn. So if a woman is listening to learn instead of to agree or disagree, and she doesn't interrupt, oh my gosh, she'll have all the information, the intimacy she ever needs.
So by listening to learn, I think what you're saying is to tease out the underlying emotions and values as opposed to just listening to the plot.
Yeah, like one of the things men have in abundance is opinions. And women get really annoyed because women don't know that men's opinions are a combination of the information he trusts and his values, his identity. So in every man's opinions, whether it's what kind of golf club you should have or public education or how to improve a relationship with your husband, in every man's opinion is a piece of himself.
Wow.
Yeah, it's awesome. And mostly what happens is when a man's expressing his opinion, because women survive by connecting with other people, we listen, do we agree with you or not, hoping we'll agree with you so we can find points of connection. And that makes us feel intimate. And often when men are expressing their opinions are so different from ours, we end up without those points of connection, and we end up with greater distance. So listening to a man's opinions, looking for connection, actually has us end up with more distance, and it's a kind of torture for us. So, and you guys have an abundance of opinions, and you love to express them, and we're tortured the whole time. So if a woman can shift to listen to learn, which literally as she's listening, she's asking the question, what matters to him? What matters to him? What is he telling me about what's important to him? What is he showing me? What matters to him? What matters to him? If she's asking that question, then it'll be a treasure chest, and she'll be fascinated. And it doesn't matter what he's talking about. It could be the 560,000th time that he's talked about motorcycles. It'll still be fascinating, because he's revealing himself.
This is remarkable. You're starting to make me feel like I'm totally transparent. We're going to take a short break here, give a chance to support our sponsors. This is Chip August. I'm talking to Allison Armstrong, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Sex, Love, and Intimacy. I'm your host, Chip August. I'm talking to Allison Armstrong. We've been talking a little bit about men and all the things that she's discovered about men. I'm curious, Allison, what do men really want?
I think men want to be heroes and be loved even when their best wasn't good enough.
Yeah. I think there's some truth in that.
I think men want to be appreciated, which mostly needs to be shown instead of said, which is not so natural for women. Definitely want to be accepted.
Can you say more about that? So, the difference between speaking appreciation and showing appreciation, and what things show appreciation to men?
Yeah, well, for example, one of the things that went out of fashion with the feminist movement, and like I said in the last show, we owe the feminist movement, so this is not about that.
But, mm-hmm.
It began, the menial chores became beneath women. And not knowing that in the simplest thing, like a shirt that's ironed, you know, or a lunch that's made, that a man can feel supported and appreciated. Small acts of kindness.
Got it. So basically, the way you're telling a man that you appreciate him are by these small acts of kindness. And without these small acts of kindness, you're saying words aren't enough, or you just don't think words are enough ever, or
it depends on the words, actually.
Yeah.
There are in our course, Celebrating Men, Satisfying Women, we teach the six most powerful words that a woman can say to a man.
Wow.
And because they connect with who a man is at his core, and they communicate, and they're clear and they're direct, but they also require a level of sincerity and heart that many women are not willing to show. So there are words that are very, very, very powerful. But in my experience, to make a gross generalization, men experience, no matter how much a woman says she appreciates him,
yeah,
there are certain acts that if she doesn't do that, the words are not enough. He doesn't feel appreciated. And for as each gender, we tend to do what we both need.
Right.
Men will show their appreciation, and a woman will be lacking for words,
mm-hmm.
and vice versa. And if we can learn to interpret the other person's communication, then we can both end up with more of what we need. Like when I know that my husband filling my car with gas is him saying he loves me and supports me and appreciates me, then
right.
It connects.
Right. Yeah, I'm listening to you, and I'm thinking I work with a lot of couples, and the thing I hear is he says, well, I took your car to the service station, and I got it serviced, and I filled it with gas, and I washed it, and can't you see that that's the way I'm telling you I love you?
Right.
And she's saying, well, I made your meals, and I knew that this was your favorite dinner, and so I cooked you this favorite dinner, and then I cleaned up after dinner. Can't you see that's how I love you? And what I get is that often, no, we're not actually seeing these acts as ways to say I love you.
Yeah, I think we need to ask, because
yeah.
Women are compelled to please men,
mm-hmm.
but we'll figure out what pleases you by observation instead of asking.
Right.
And not knowing what really connects.
Right.
And I think we need to ask each other.
Right. I agree. Because I think if you ask a man, what lets me know you really love me, I'm guessing cooking my favorite dinner does not figure in the top five.
Yep, you know, I would
like,
bet.
Right. If you ask a woman, how do you know I really love you? You know, I'm guessing getting my car serviced does not figure in the top five, and yet that's what we do.
Yep.
Now I'm big on telling couples they need to actually talk. That they, you know, like one of the things I do with couples is I actually have them give verbal appreciation to each other.
Great.
Do you think this is valuable? Do you see the value in this?
I think it's fabulous, and again, I think we need to tell each other what connects.
Yeah.
This is what I most want to be appreciated for. These are the words that matter the most to me. These are the things that when you notice them, I feel seen and gotten and appreciated. We need to be very specific.
Right. But that leads us back to women's self-esteem then. You know, like so many, I noticed that so many women are afraid to ask for what they really want because they're afraid that the guy's just going to say no.
Well, there's two parts. One is afraid that a man will say no. Another, which, by the way, we're afraid of that because, oh my gosh, we've asked you for what we needed.
Right.
At the wrong time and with the wrong words.
Yeah.
And then we don't get what we need, and then we assume it's because you don't want to give me what I need.
Mm.
Not knowing that it was the presentation. And so this is one of the things we teach in all our courses, is how to ask men for what you need, which includes when and the words and what to say so that he's not on the defensive to begin with. And then to ask what I call the partner question, which after saying exactly what it is that you need and telling a man what it will provide, because men are not task-oriented, you're result-oriented. You don't live to take out the trash, but if it makes me feel like a princess, that's good, you know?
Right.
Okay, I'll take out the trash if that's the result. And then the partner question, which is, what do you need to give me what I need? And I have to teach women, when you ask a man that question, what do you need to give me what I need, give up any expectation that what he's going to say will make sense to you. Because, for example, most women need their partners to take the trash out. Most women, it makes her feel appreciated and honored and not a maid. And most men are willing to do it. And most men will say what they need is to be told when it needs to be taken out.
Right.
And most women think that is insane because...
Right, can't you just see it? Right.
Exactly.
Right.
And they don't understand, given the way that men think and organize themselves and commit themselves all the time to what they're doing, that they actually do need to be told when it needs to be taken out. And if you're willing to provide that, you can have your trash taken out all the time. I actually have to ask my husband to not take the trash out. That's not ready. That would waste a plastic bag.
I'm laughing because I'm thinking, you know, should picking up the trash really be a goal in relationship? And yet I know in my heart of hearts, I mean, I hear enough couples, what they break up over is picking up the trash, doing the laundry, doing the, you know, that actually these little trivial things really matter.
Well, the way I say it is, you know, 95% of life is incredibly mundane. You know, we're not jetting to Paris for lunch.
No, I'm not.
So a relationship and love is, as an act, is going to show up in laundry and trash and meals and made beds or unmade bed, which is a huge difference between men and women, is an unmade bed. We can mm-hmm. talk about that if you wanted. But, I mean, it's in toothpaste caps, and how often do we have sex, and are you really into it or not? And, I mean, that is life.
Yeah. We need to take another short break to give a little support to our sponsors. You're listening to Alison Armstrong on Sex, Love, and Intimacy. I'm your host, Chip August, and we'll be right back. We're back. This is Chip August. You're listening to my guest, Alison Armstrong. We're talking about sex, love, and intimacy. Just as we went to break, Alison, you were saying something about... we were talking about all the mundane things that men and women want, and I noticed the thing we haven't talked very much about is sex. So let's talk for a moment about sex here. Is there a real difference between what men want and what women want, and how does that all show up in this?
Wow. I think there's more of a difference between what we need than what we want. And it's an area of huge misunderstanding. We do a whole weekend on men and sex, and then we have an R-rated section in the Understanding Women workshop about sex. Mm-hmm. And you probably know way more than I do. Still,
I know a bit.
It's more your area than mine. But I think one of the biggest things that women don't know about men and sex is how much for a man a satisfying sexual experience depends upon how much pleasure did his partner let him give her.
Yeah.
We have been taught by Cosmopolitan, et cetera, that to be a great lover is how much pleasure we give.
Right.
Not how much pleasure we're willing to receive.
Right, and that will work really well for all the very, very narcissistic men, and for everyone else. When men talk among men, and it's hard to get them to admit this, and you ask them, like, what was one of the greatest moments during sex, they'll tell you, oh, my partner had this screaming orgasm that went for like 10 minutes. I felt like I was a king, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, and women don't know that. And when I, honestly, when I found it out, I became very lazy in bed. And my husband became really happy.
Yeah.
And so I think that's really important, that the giving and receiving, we need to really practice receiving and realize that men are providers.
Yeah.
You know, that's in the core of who you are. You're a provider, and your most satisfying moments are going to be when you got to give something that was completely received and valued.
Yeah. And, of course, we're back to that thing you were saying in the last show about women really need to find that temptress and that queen, mm-hmm. because that queen wants to be served, and that temptress really invites the right kind of service.
Yeah, and it's the kind of service... That's so glad you brought this up, Chip, because so many times when women think of service, it's more like hierarchical. It's more like, you know, a maid. Or if you're serving me, you're less than me.
Right.
And what I've discovered about relationships between men and women is when a woman allows a man to serve her and then is honored that a man such as he would do that.
Yeah.
That's when it gets, you know, what I call creme brulee. Mm. You know? This is when it's really yummy.
Now, we are almost out of time. I want to, before we go, though, I want to say a few things, and I want to ask you something first, though. I like to give my listeners an exercise, something that they can do on their own or at home that can enhance the sexuality or the love or the intimacy that's in their lives. We, at the end of our last show together, you had a great exercise for women. Do you have an exercise for men that maybe you could give us?
I do, and I think your women listeners can actually teach this to their men, too.
Cool.
At the beginning of the show, we were talking about that men and women interrupt for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And men interrupt because men have two, what I call, default ways of listening. So if the person is talking is fine, a man is listening, what's the point? What's the point? What's the point?
Mm-hmm.
What's the point? What's the point? And if the point does not become clear pretty soon, he'll interrupt and ask a question, and the question usually is, what's the point?
Right,
you know,
right.
Could
what's
you get to the point?
Yeah.
Could you cut to the end? If the person speaking is upset, then the man will listen, what's the problem? What's the problem? What's the problem? And men listen from that because you're you know, glorious, compulsive problem solvers, and you hold yourself accountable for solving the problems of the people you care about. And if the problem is not becoming clear, you'll interrupt to ask a clarifying question,
mm-hmm.
In order to be able to solve the problem.
Right.
Why this doesn't work with women is because, and this is what men need to do, okay? You want to think of a woman as a gatherer, and she has this big basket, and she goes out in life, and she puts all these things in her baskets, all the things she thought and she felt and that people were wearing and that was on sale and things that happened and things she wished had happened. and they all go into the basket. And when the basket is full, she feels incredibly uncomfortable. She can't listen. She can't pay attention. She can't receive anything else. She's got to empty her basket. And women empty their basket through show and tell.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's emptying her basket. She's just going, blah, 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 blah. And he's listening, what's the point? Or if she's upset as she empties her basket, he's listening, what's the problem?
Right.
In those interruptions, in that deflating that you described earlier,
mm-hmm.
what's actually happening is he's interrupted the flow of the emptying of the basket.
Mm-hmm.
And it's horrible for a woman for that flow to be interrupted. We are all about flow, and we just need it to flow out. And so what I teach men to do, which it's so much easier, and it works really well, but women need to set men up to do this because it's not natural. So a woman would say to her husband, you know, honey, I got to empty my basket. Just hold the trash. And there's no point. If there's a point, I'll make sure that I underline it.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as I can tell, there's no point. There's no problem. I just have to get it out. Would you please hold the trash? And then, God bless men, being single focused. I've watched hundreds of men do this. A woman is talking, and he's thinking over and over again. Instead of, you know, what's the problem? What's the problem? What's the point? What's the point? And he's going, hold the trash. Hold the trash. Just hold the trash. Just hold the trash. And he's just totally focused on holding the trash. And anything else, honey? Was that it? Is there anything else? And, I mean, if you ask a woman, is there anything else? She feels like you've just given her the hugest gift. Oh, I can keep emptying? Yes, honey, keep going. Is there anything else? They're like, oh, my gosh. We have these, when a man says to a woman, is there anything else? We have a moment of ecstasy. Our chest fills with happiness. And, oh, my gosh, amazing foreplay. Just hold the trash. And at the end of it, we're glowing and peaceful and available. And
well, is there anything else? Sorry, I just couldn't resist. That's a great...
You're good, Chip.
It would be a great... That's a terrific exercise to practice. It's really great to just, like, for men, just let her run with it and just keep holding the trash and just periodically say, is there anything else? Is there anything else? And just notice how much of it you can hold. That's a terrific exercise.
You can just have the, you know, it can be trash with a tube at the bottom that's going out. You don't have to remember it.
Right. You don't have to remember it.
You don't have to remember
right.
it. That's important because you guys are trying to remember. You don't have to remember
right.
and there is no point.
Which is really difficult. So men, remember this, right? You don't have to remember and there is no point.
Yes.
The act of listening is the point.
You will solve her biggest problem just by holding the trash. And because it's not natural for men, it's natural for you to be providers. And if I say, you know, how you can provide for me the most is by just holding the trash, then he will consciously do that. But she needs to ask for it because what's natural to him is what's the point and what's the problem.
You are just a font of information. I feel like I could talk to you for days and days and days, but sadly we are out of time. So first, I just really want to thank you for being a guest on these two shows. I've just really enjoyed talking to you. I hope we talk again sometime in the future. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, and thanks for the work you do.
Yeah. And listeners, if you have questions or you want to just send me some email or give me some suggestions for future shows, you can email me at chip@personallifemedia.com. That's personallifemedia, all one word, .com. If you want to try leaving a voicemail for me, we have a new voicemail system, so you can leave voicemail for Chip August by calling 206-350-5333. Please leave your name. Please leave my show name, Sex, Love, and Intimacy. Leave your question or comment, your phone number, and or your email. And please know that when you leave a message on this system, you are indicating your agreement for us to use your message on air. I don't promise we will, but we might use your message on air. And by leaving the message, you give us the agreement to do that. Also, if you want text or transcripts of this show or any other shows in the Personal Life Media Network, please visit our website at personallifemedia.com. That's all one word, personallifemedia.com. Thank you very much for sharing this time with me. This is your host, Chip August, and I hope to be talking to you again soon.